find out they actually don't want to oppress women. Yeah. We don't know now.
Dream on. Dream fucking on.
Belzer, I'm proud of you. I couldn't have said it any better.
I have heard from so many Iraqi women, yeah. Richard, who have said, why is it that more stories aren't being done about how grateful we are that Saddam Hussein is out of there? And you know why they're grateful? This is what they tell me. For no other reason than when he's gone, it means that the Iraqi people have to confront themselves.
Right.
And that is when they can begin taking responsibility for their future.
Now, occasionally, well, no more than occasionally, quite often, the other side will say something that's just so damn stupid, you just don't have anything for it. It's not that she's got me stumped. It's that she's heard from so many Iraqi women. Again, what would that be, 6? Would it be 8? Would it be 14? Would it be 45? Would it be 200? Would it be 6,000? She heard just from so many Iraqi women. And what did they have to say? They said, oh, thank God, with Saddam gone, now we can confront our own demons and figure out who we are as a people. Yeah, I'll bet the Iraqi women sit around all day and wonder about that. You know, I've never lived under Saddam, and I'll bet you haven't either, but I can imagine, I have a wild theory that if you stayed out of Saddam's way, you could probably do all right. And I'm not saying it was a paradise. Someone tries to hang that on me, I'll slap you. But the idea that when Saddam was in charge, you didn't have, what is it, they say 70 car bombs a day or 70 attacks a day. I guess part of that's car bombs, part of that's snipers, part of that's mortars. I haven't heard any numbers lately, but they're about 60 to 80 attacks a day, and people would rather live with that than Saddam. If I had a staff, if I had more time, or if I knew what I was talking about, I might be able to explain that at least under Saddam they had electricity, the traffic worked, the merchants had things in their stores. They had gasoline. You could get a car. You could get your car repaired. You could go to work. It certainly wasn't a paradise, but now you can't walk down the street without some asshole grabbing you and trying to cut your head off. That or, Koresh forbid, you get near some American or some building that the Americans have taken over, and they run a U-Haul truck full of C4 into the damn thing. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we heard there was some big car bomb went off, 125 dead. Do we think those were all soldiers? I mean, they weren't even ours. Apparently, we lost a couple in that big, massive bomb. But most were Iraqis, and you figure out of the 125, maybe two-thirds were soldiers, but the other third were people standing around. And you know something else? Again, not to attack Bill Maher, but he said, might be on this tape, might be a different night, but he said, yes, the left says 100,000 Iraqis have died, but didn't 100,000 Iraqis die under Saddam the previous year or the previous 2 years? And I just don't think so. Republicans are so good with these numbers games. Let's talk about the mass graves. What is a mass grave? Again, with the numbers. Is it 6? Is it 30? Is it 80 people? I don't think, I'll bet $500 there are no 100,000 people mass graves in Iraq. I'll bet there's not one in the entire country and since Saddam came to power. I'll bet there's not one. There may not be any 500s. We don't have any idea. Oh, a little sidebar. The mass graves, those were killed with poison gas that they bought from Reagan and Bush. Okay. But for Bill Maher to justify our killing 100,000 because Saddam probably killed 100,000 in the 2 years previous to the invasion, I don't think that's right. I mean, you would just think, if I was Saddam and I'm a brutal dictator who doesn't care about anything, I just wouldn't have time to kill 50,000 people a year. If you kill a couple on TV, isn't everybody going to get the message? Do you really have to kill 50,000 people a year to keep the populace in line when you got the entire country in a stranglehold? I just don't think so. And yes, Saddam's an evil man. And yes, the Udi and Kudi were evil bastards. But did they really kill? That's 4,000 people a month? That just sounds busy to me. I mean, there are that many sadistic guards in Iraq that they just... One reason Hitler, his big final solution with the poison gas is because they wanted to kill so many people, they didn't want to have to spend a bullet on every Jew. So they came up with the gas, that a little bit of gas would kill hundreds of them. And that's what I'm saying, when you get in the mass extermination business, it's costly, it's expensive, it's time-consuming, it's a big job. I just don't see an evil, brutal dictator spending all that energy trying to murder a bunch of people just for the sake of murdering a whole bunch of people. Probably went longer on that than I needed to, but Bill Maher, shame on you. young man can sing. So I'm watching 60 Minutes last week, and Ed Bradley's doing a story on some tsunami. Well, they weren't victims. They were people who should have been victims. Don't know the name of the island. They said it was 2 hours from Thailand, and they should have all been killed. But on this little island, nobody was killed. And Ed Bradley went there to find out why. And it turns out there is a true natural, well, natural in that nature has something to do with it, phenomenon. When the tsunami started hundreds of miles away, my guess is it vibrated the earth. It did something. Anyway, they said the elephants started stampeding to higher ground. And the birds and the animals, whatever, they all started acting funny. And everybody knew something was going on. And if I understood correctly, they said that the water that was naturally forming the beach went away. It went out to sea, maybe, I don't know, a half a mile or something, that the beach, which was 20 feet long, I'm sorry, 20 feet deep, whatever, 20 feet to the water, was now a half a mile or a mile to the water. And some people knew that this was trouble. The old guy, they interviewed an old guy who didn't speak English, and they asked him to describe it, and he said he went around telling everyone in the village, there's a giant wave coming, you better get the hell to high ground as fast as you can, and they called him a liar for some reason. And then they called him a drunk, and they called him a whole lot of names. And he said, I swear I didn't have a thing to drink that day, which makes me think he hit the bottle a little bit. But he warned everybody that the big giant wave was coming, and eventually everybody said, okay, okay, okay. All the people on the island and the tourists and whatever, they all moved to higher ground. And then later on, the wave hit, and nobody on the entire island, I guess there was hundreds or maybe thousands of people on this island, the entire village was destroyed, but nobody was killed or hurt, apparently. So Ed Bradley's talking to this guy, and he said, how did you know the wave was coming? And he said, well, the elephants and the animals and that, and then when the water went out, I knew something was wrong. So I told everybody, and they said they didn't believe me, but eventually I convinced them. And then Ed Bradley asked the old man, do you know why the tsunami happened? What caused the tsunami? And the old guy said, well, sure, the wave was hungry for some people, and the wave hadn't eaten in a long time, so the big wave decided it was hungry, and they showed, I mean, all this is coming through in the translation, of course, but they showed he opened his mouth real big, and he was, you know, biting the air as if to demonstrate how the wave was hungry, and the wave wanted to eat some people. And obviously the man's crazy, but you can't really fault him. He looks like he'd never read a book. He looks like he'd never seen a television. He'd never seen a computer. He looked like he just wasn't Mr. Science and Logic. So you can't really blame a guy. He was obviously, as a child, taught that the wave gets hungry, the wave gets mad, the wave thinks. And so that's what he believes. He was an old guy, 60, 70, and he was brought up believing that the wave could be mean and would sometimes eat people. And I got to thinking, well, you know, that guy, he has an excuse. He's never been exposed to science and logic. What would he know? And then I thought how alike he is to the wacky Christians in the United States and in other countries. To me, that is exactly what religion is all about. You know, if you've studied any kind, if you've ever been inside a school or if you've ever tried to learn something, you know that the science and logic, it works all the time. It's a guarantee. But some people chose, or to this day still choose, to reject the science and logic. They choose to tell themselves, they choose to believe that the wave gets hungry and the wave eats people when it gets hungry enough. That's what religion's all about. That's why these wackos are doing this business with that Terry Schiavo in Florida. That's why they can't accept evolution. I mean, there's a, you know all the examples. There's a thousand of them. But isn't it funny that the old man on this island off Thailand, he can't be expected to know any better. But the American, you know, there are doctors in America. Well, as a matter of fact, Monday night on Jon Stewart, he played a clip of Bill Frist, who is a medical doctor, a heart surgeon, if I'm not mistaken. He was on with Judas Maximus on This Week, I think around Christmas. Anyway, they showed us a little tape where Judas Maximus asked Bill Frist if you could catch AIDS from tears or sweat. And Frist said, well, I'm not sure. And Steffi looked at him like, hey, asshole, you're a doctor. Why don't you have a clue what causes the disease?
Now, you're a doctor. Do you believe that tears and sweat can transmit HIV?
I don't know. I can tell you.
You don't know?
I can tell you things like
well, wait, let me just stop there. You don't know that you believe that tears and sweat might be able to transmit
AIDS? Yeah, no,
AIDS?
I can. That's the guy making the life or death medical decisions on behalf of the country. You know, I'd cry, but I'd have to put a condom on my face.
Frist was caught up. He was torn, trying to serve two asterisks. He's a doctor. He knows for a fact that sweat and tears can't transmit AIDS, but his religious insanity acts like a giant brick wall, and it jumps between him and logic, and says, no, 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 you cannot use science and logic when you're dealing with medical issues. You can't do that, Mr. Frist. And says, okay, okay, you know, he's all for that. Why do people reject that which comes with the guarantee for this wacky invisible cloud being pie in the sky, the wave is hungry bullshit? It's just amazing. And if you're a believer, I am not trying to insult you. I'm just trying to point out that it's kind of easy to overcome the temptation to think that there's an omnipotent being somewhere that's got a plan for you, that you're going to meet this being when you die, and you're going to go to heaven and sit on the throne with the white clouds and the angels singing and whatever else goes on up in heaven. But you can't really think that. You just really can't. If you want, when you break it all down, your choices are the wave is hungry, or as the earth cools, the tectonic plates rub against each other, sometimes violently, and when they shift radically and suddenly, it causes thousands of cubic miles of ocean to move suddenly, and that's what causes the wave. Now, if you want to believe the wave got hungry, fine, but keep it away from the schools, keep it away from the courthouses, and for damn sure, Dr. Frist, keep it out of the operating room, because you can't serve two masters. You can't be, in my opinion, you can't be a Christian doctor. If you want to be a science and logic doctor, and then when you go home at night, say a little prayer, hey, no harm, no foul. But don't stand there and tell us that the earth was created in 5 days, and that there is no evolution, and that Eve was made from a rib, and all that other crazy stuff. Please. The little man in Thailand, he doesn't have a choice. He knows no better. But you do know better. Frist knows better. Bush knows better. Tom DeLay, they all know better. But they're either lying to themselves and us, or they're just lying to us. I mean, it makes you wonder how a guy like George Bush can steal $100 million a day and murder 100,000 people and be a good, godly Christian. It just makes you wonder. But remember, you always have that choice. You can reject the insanity that they drilled into your mind before your brain functioned properly. You can do it. I know you can. Or you can stick with the wave is hungry theory, and that would disappoint me.
Support dictators.
Exactly. That's the point. But that means intervening, Richard. Because how does a brutalized people manage to overthrow its oppressors without some help?
But there's a long list in this planet of priority. I mean, Iraq was certainly a place
Absolutely.
Where there's problems. But there are other places in the world where we're needed, where we're not. So it was purely a political war.
Well, my good friend Richard Belzer stumbled there just a little bit saying, so what was a political war? I think what he means is, see, they've changed, again, they've changed A to B, and they expected us not to notice, and most of America hasn't. You know, we went to war to stop the imminent launch, and then when we got over there and there was no imminent launch, they said, well, what about freedom? And they all got a big light bulb went on over their heads and acted like, well, no, we came here to free the people. And Belzer's point We invaded Iraq because they have oil. You know, the people of Cuba are not free, and the people of North Korea are not free, and the people of, you name it, Yemen. I mean, we could go down a long list of where the people aren't free. But unless you have oil, we just don't give a fuck. We invaded Iraq to steal their oil. The excuse we gave the people around the world is, well, we're here to save them. But everybody knows we're lying because we didn't say, we've got to invade right now. We got to get those inspectors out of there right now. We got to invade right now, right now, right now to free those people. No, we didn't say that. We had to go right now, right now, right now, because Saddam was about to press the button to launch his biological terror on the East Coast. But the press and the Democrats, they all forget about this.
I'm not glorifying war. I'm not by any means a cheerleader for war. But the United States was attacked, and we did respond. We were attacked
only
on September 11th by someone else, and then
not
we responded.
Not when other people
right.
were attacked.
And I think
and
if
look
George
at how
Bush,
many lives were lost precisely because America acted only when it became obvious.
Well, I agree. When George Bush was selling the Iraq war, and there's no doubt he lied to sell this
right.
war. Now,
right.
maybe every war has to be lied about to be sold. But he, you know, his first reason was weapons and mass destruction, links to Al-Qaeda, all bullshit, bullshit, bullshit.
Right.
About the fourth reason that he listed for going to the war is the war. The reason we're there now, to spread democracy, to start this brush fire of democracy in the Arab world, so that maybe long range, we modernize them away from terrorism. If he had just said that to begin with, he would have had me at hello.
Okay. Well, do you think, though, Bill, he would have had the American people
exactly
on mass at hello?
Exactly not. Right.
You know, I guess my ears are lying to me because that girl just said, well, of course he had to lie to get us into a war. And Bill Maher just said, if he had told us up front that we were going to sacrifice 1,500 or 2,500 soldiers to free Fallujah, he would have had me at hello. I don't think either of those makes any goddamn sense at all. And I understand, I don't want to leave the impression that I could get on live HBO and out-argue these people. I mean, I've never been on a camera before, and I'd probably see the lights and go, you know, turn into that Jack from China Syndrome, that was a vibration, you know, that'd be probably the only thing I could say. But how can these practice people get on there and say such bullshit? Maher ought to be running down their throats when he just said, everyone knows the president lied to get us into this war. He should have said, isn't it right, dude? Isn't it right, dudehead? He should have got those two on record. And let him try to get out of that. Let him try to say, oh, no, no. It was always the imminent launch. Where's the weapons? I mean, they're stuck. But he's, for some reason, being a nice guy, not going to call them on it. You know they're going to rub it in your face if you ever make a mistake, so you have to at least get the advantage. You make them admit it. If they don't want to admit it, at least the crowd knows that everybody in the room understands that they lied and they don't have the courage or the balls to admit it. So, you know, you don't have to rub their face in it hard, but you got to bring up the subject, give them a chance to dodge their way out of it just to prove your credibility is better than theirs. For some reason, he chose not to take that tack. I'm surprised why, but, you know, but the two of them just said something that was so far out of both their spheres. I don't know. Maybe it's just getting late in the hour and they're wanting to go home.
And if you saw it in a movie where the president was conferring with his aides and he said, look, we've got to do this war for the right reasons, but of course we're not going to buy it for that. We're going to have to sell them. You'd accept that in a movie. But of course when it's happening in real life.
But also keep in mind, Bill, that the anti-war crowd also changed its position. When they their first opposition to the war had to do with what they believed would be, you know, massive refugee camps all over the place.
That is some of the biggest load of shit illogic I've ever heard. I've been following this war as much as anybody, well, more than most, just because it's semi my business, and I have never, ever, once, ever, one time, ever heard a Democrat or a liberal say, we can't bomb this innocent country because what about the refugee camps? I mean, what the hell does that got to do with why we want to bomb a city of 5 million people? The refugee camp, and we changed our reasons for not going to war? How about that we're not in the mood to murder a country just so Bush can steal $100 million a day? That seems to me like a pretty good rationale to not go to war. And that's constant from the minute he said, I got an idea, let's fuck Saddam, I'm taking him out.
materialized, then it became a conspiracy about oil. All right? Yeah. So everybody has changed their positions. Everybody
but
has
the ultimate, the ultimate.
Selling.
Now, see what she did there? Pretty good classic right-wing tactic. She's saying it's okay that Bush has changed his reason from imminent launch to let's free those people because all the liberals, again, how many is that? All the liberals said, what about the refugee camps? And then that changed into he's just stealing for oil. Well, none of that makes any fucking sense. He was all, Bill Maher had it right all those years ago when he said, what we've done, we've lost our car keys in the garage, meaning Saddam. But we're going to look for him in the living room because the light is better there, meaning Iraq. In other words, we can't catch the guy that did it, but we know a country that can't run and hide. No power on earth can pick up Baghdad and put it in some cave in a mountainside somewhere. So we found a target we can attack. Even though our car keys are still in the garage, we're going to look around in the living room. Now, I don't know why the whole panel's letting her get away with that. Her rationale, of course, we changed sides, so did you, so it's a wash, let's move on. That's not what we got here. Bush sent 1,500 soldiers to their graves, 100,000 civilians, he's stealing $100 million a day, and because she thinks some liberal mentioned something about a refugee camp, that gets Bush off the hook for the murders and the $100 million a day, and the other two are going to sit there and let her get away with that? Amazing.
You may be an intellectual straight shooter, but don't you think that a certain portion of the people that were against the war were against it because it was Bush's war? If Clinton had been the
absolutely.
One.
Absolutely.
And so that to me is a huge factor in this. And
again, total, total bullshit, horseshit from the word go, from top to bottom, left to right, coast to coast, wall to wall, horseshit, bullshit. Clinton had a war. He stopped the genocide in Slovakia or wherever that country is over there, and he didn't lose one soldier. And the Republicans screamed like crazy. He's wagging the dog. He's just trying to save himself from Monica. How dare he use the armed forces this way? And now when Bush turns around and invades an oil-rich country that didn't do anything to us, kills 1,540 Marines and 100,000 civilians, and they're saying, it's just like Clinton's war. And Bill Maher says, sure it is. What the fuck is wrong with Bill Maher? We expect the Republicans to lie. I thought Bill Maher had enough money and enough power with HBO behind him that he could say whatever he wanted. But for them to say Clinton's war and Bush's war are the same, and notice it was the Republican that called it Bush's war. He's willing to concede that. The Democrats don't have the brains or the balls to say this is Bush's war. Oh, no, it's America's war. We're all in this together. Meanwhile, for some reason, it was okay for them to impeach Clinton, but if we say the war's a mistake, we're un-American, we're not behind the president. Jesus Christ, a double standard here, you could drive a fucking truck through. So how long have I been whining about Bush stealing $100 million a day? Are you as sick of hearing it as I am of saying it? Yes, I hear you. But for some reason, nobody on the whole planet but old Bart at BartCop.com and BartCop Radio will even speak of this. And I'm confused as to why. The sons of bitches are stealing at least $100 million a day. And it's so plain and so obvious, it's right there like the nose on your damn face. But nobody wants to talk about it, not even the good guys. If you don't believe me, would you believe Wolfowitz? If Wolfowitz was to tell you that Bush was stealing $100 million a day, you don't have to believe me, but would you believe Wolfowitz when he tells you Bush is stealing $100 million a day?
The oil revenues of that country could bring between $50 and $100 billion over the course of the next two or three years. We're dealing with a country that can really finance its own reconstruction and relatively soon.
You just heard him say that. Let's review. According to Wolfowitz, now we're going to use his outside numbers. He said 50 to 100 billion over the next 2 to 3 years. So what we're going to use, the figure of 100 billion over 3 years. That's inside his little scope there. 100 billion over 3 years comes out roughly 33 billion a year. We've been there over 2 years. Have we seen one dime of that $66 billion? And you know what? When you divide $66 billion into, say, 730 days, that comes out to roughly $100 million a day, which means Bart was right. Bush is stealing $100 million a day. His own boy just sat there and told you that's what Iraq pumps. And where is that money? Nobody asks. Where is that damn money? $66 billion missing on top of all the rest that he stole from the Treasury, from the pharmaceutical company ripoff, from the Social Security ripoff, from the bankruptcy ripoff. That extra $66 billion on top of that is just petty cash to the BFEE. But why doesn't someone else mention this? Why don't we hear other people talking about this? Wolfowitz just told you, $66 billion. They will have $100 billion this time next year. In March of 06, they will have stolen $100 billion, and that's not counting all the other assets. Remember, every time they kick over a rock in Iraq, they come up with an extra $40 million in cash that Saddam had hidden, and all these buildings and palaces that are lined with gold and rare diamonds and this and that. Bush signed a paper that said all of the assets of Iraq have been assigned to the Iraqi Provisional Authority Coalition, whatever they called it, but it's under Bush's control, so that's a BFEE deal. Bush legally owns everything in Iraq on top of the $100 billion that Wolfowitz said they're stealing. But nobody wants to talk about it. Only Bart, of all the people on the left. You don't hear any newspapers talk about it. Don't hear any columnists talk about it. No TV talking heads will talk about it. But they're stealing $100 million a day. Nobody wants to talk about it. That pisses me off.
What the hell is a Bart cop? If you don't know, you're not listening.